Oh, I have had no luck lately. Wait, lady luck?
Britsky, I got you. I've had so much luck on SpinQuest.com. They have all of my favorite games, slot games, live blackjack craps, and bubble craps. You can even get a $30 coin pack for just 10 bucks.
10 bucks for 30? I'm headed over to SpinQuest.com right now.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
Stop the podcast.
Stop the podcast.
Hi, everybody. Just to let you know, this episode of Fish is sponsored by TV licensing.
Yes, TV licensing. What are you watching on TV, Andy?
I have been watching a show that's called 2 Weeks in August.
Okay.
Despite it being July at the time of recording.
Oh, you don't have to watch TV shows in the time that their name references.
No, absolutely. I watched The Darling Buds of May in winter. Anyway, 2 Weeks in August. It's a really good series. It's set on a lovely Mediterranean holiday.
Ooh.
And it's a group of old mates from uni who've gathered together. Some of them have got kids, some of them haven't. Some of them have been going through big life events. And it's one of those amazing pressure cooker series where things just get more and more and more tense.
Oh, those stressful ones.
Yeah, I love it. I love it.
I love my comedy, I gotta say. So I've been watching Android, which is Diane Morgan's new thing, and I absolutely love it. But I just, for me, I always, on television, watch everything with someone from Bolton in it. That's basically all I watch.
And she's from Bolton?
She's from Bolton.
But in this show, I believe she's a robot.
She's a robot, and it is not certain where in the country she's from.
It depends where the facility is that makes her, I suppose.
I guess so. But what are we actually here to say?
Oh, we're here to say that if you want to watch any of these shows, your TV license covers you to watch over 400 TV channels and everything on BBC iPlayer.
That is incredible.
So 2 Weeks in August has finished going out now, but you can get hold of it on the iPlayer.
If you want to find out more about this, then go to tvl.co.uk/pod.
Now back to the tension and the stress and the misery of this episode of Fish.
Oh, I thought you were referencing Bolton. On with the podcast.
Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road. Paul Kuharski from paulkuharski.com with us for the next hour, talking all things Tennessee Titans. We welcome your thoughts as well on our text line, 615-737-1025, our phone number, 615-737-1025. PK, Will Levis gets hurt at the end of last game against Houston, goes down, looked really bad. Walks off a high ankle sprain, according to Jeremy Fowler, which puts his status in doubt for this week. We were discussing this yesterday on the show. So the Titans, they make these coaching changes last year. You know, they fire Todd Downing, they fire Keith Carter, shuffle around some other members of their coaching staff on the offensive side of things. What do you think is Vrabel's next decision there? Assuming that they keep Vrabel, which I think they're going to keep Vrabel, could there be more coaching staff adjustments coming for the Titans after this season is done? Even maybe in some cases, guys that have only been there for a year after changes were made a year ago.
I think Amy Adams Strunk probably has to push for some. I think she probably pushed for Craig Aukerman because that was so uncharacteristic of Mike Vrabel. I mean, he hadn't.
You're reporting that, or are you guessing that?
No, I'm guessing that.
Okay.
But I think it's an educated guess based on the fact that he hadn't done it before and that Craig was, you know, sainted by Mike Vrabel. I do think that some he's allowed to have a correct opinion, you know, from dart throwing. I think some of the positional coaching complaints are unreasonable. All right. Hoteling. I still can't get his name. I apologize.
I'm pretty sure that's it. Hoteling.
Hoteling?
Haas on the offensive line, you know, resume-wise, doesn't look like a great resume, right? He's not experienced coming in. He was the assistant of a fired guy. And I know the reference point for everybody is Mike Munchak. And Mike Munchak's an incredible offensive line coach. But the level of talent... First off, the pool of talent generally for offensive linemen is a lot different than it was when Mike Munchak was doing his marvelous work for the Titans in terms of what comes through college based on the spread and all of that. Secondly, as big a Mike Munchak fan as I am, I don't know how much better he could make Andre Dillard, who's not that interested in playing and is not very skilled.
Jeff Stoutland's the best offensive line coach in the NFL. He did nothing with Andre Dillard.
Exactly.
He's the Eagles' offensive line coach, the best offensive line coach in the NFL.
So if you're looking to point blame about the Titans' offensive line, first, point at the guys who haven't done their job well. And second, and this is the second time I've asked it, I asked Vrabel what degree of guilt or blame goes to the people who decided that this group was good enough to protect the quarterback and to block for the run game. And he avoided the question a second time, and it'll be one of my first questions at the season-ending press conference.
Oh, goody.
Those are the people who are culpable for the pass protection and the run blocking are Mike Vrabel and Rand Carthon, who assembled this group and thought it was sufficient. Reconstructing a group from last year that they knew wasn't sufficient. It was the number one goal last year to redo this offensive line, and this is what they came up with. So that's the big problem. The position coach, you know, doesn't have a huge role in that. And listen, I've listened to Stillman a little bit more frequently lately in the car, which I'm going to stop doing.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm the guy
obsessively.
I'm the guy who blames you for bringing him up regularly on the show. So I'm guilty of that now. He's dangerous, right, for Titans fans. He's just dangerous. He's got no nuance to him. So he's saying, well, when Munchak was here, he had input in what players they brought in. And Ran has said the assistant coaches have input in what players they bring in. So Haas clearly had input in what players they bring in. And he leaves no space between the degree of input Mike Munchak, a Hall of Famer, who's one of the best position coaches probably in history of the league, what degree of input he would have versus what degree of input a first-year position coach with no experience would have. And he acted yesterday like it would be exactly the same. I'm here to tell you it's nothing the same. No degree does Haas, a first-year coach working with a first-year GM, have the same degree of input in who they're bringing in. He has nowhere near the same fingerprints on Andre Dillard that Mike Munchak had on Eugene Amado. Nowhere near it, I guarantee you. And if you listened to that yesterday and you bought it, you'd need to get that out of your brain.
I missed that. Thanks for letting us know about what that segment was. So dangerous, like...
That's dangerous because Titans fans
double
who
agent,
are susceptible to an impressionable and think that they're learning something from somebody who, you know, is cast as an expert, is saying something that's completely nonsensical. He also was saying, while we're at it, and I'll be finished with him, that and he's correct about being concerned about PSLs, right?
Yeah.
They're counting on PSLs to pay for a significant share of their share of the stadium. And if those PSLs don't sell, they're going to be in a hole for that piece. But he is talking kind of about the whole financial setup of the Titans being shaky with the new stadium because of that. I reported from the owners' meetings, and you can guess who's at the owners' meetings, and I'm not talking about the one owner we know, but to 31 others, 30 others,
yep.
Given that Green Bay doesn't have an owner.
Robbie, you started going to that.
Thank you.
Do you have stock? I could have talked to you there.
You could have.
About the stability of the organization and the liquidity of the team to spend money on players, given that they've got this huge commitment, and was told over and over, the league desperately makes it so that a team with a new stadium is very financially equipped to function. They want new stadiums, and they want teams in new stadiums
right. Yep.
To be just fine. And so, yes, will there be PSL concerns if those don't sell? Yes. But are they going to have plenty of money to be liquid and do what they need to do? Absolutely.
Whether Jerry Jones likes it or not, there's a safety net for – franchises in different positions.
Sure. Right.
Especially if they build a stadium.
So if you came away from listening to that show yesterday frightened that the Titans are in some sort of financial plight.
Yeah, it's the NFL.
They're not.
So, yeah, it's the NFL. I mean, that's I didn't hear that either, but apparently you listen to every segment.
I listened to two segments.
No, yeah. The only two he listened to. Those are the only two.
And I texted him and those things. And then I said, I have arrived at the grocery store and I will be listening to Christmas music the rest of the way.
So the assistant coach conversation is interesting because I do think that you have to – I'm with you. I think you don't want to put too much on assistant. I really, position coaches, it's so much about the players. You know, I mean, everything that they teach and do comes down from the head coach, the coordinators to them, right? I mean, their jobs are important, but, like, they shouldn't get too much credit when people are getting on. They shouldn't get too much blame.
Well, look at Rob Moore. Rob Moore wasn't getting results. Then Rob Moore had A.J. Brown.
Right.
And he got great results.
Yeah.
And now he doesn't have A.J. Brown. He's not getting great results.
Right.
It's pretty simple.
Now, I will say, you know, Vrabel did. I think the overplayed thing is Vrabel hires his buddies. So he went out and got Chris Harris last year. Big deal. Like, he went – I mean, that, I promise you, that was
– a very
that
big
was
deal.
Amy Adams Strunk saying, yeah, okay, we'll pay for that. Right? So –
and no results.
But
Roger McCreary, good results. Everybody else?
But, yeah, but I mean, really. The point being, you know, I think that's worthwhile. You could look at that in the offensive line, possibly. Let's also keep in mind the story of the Carolina Panthers, and they have major issues, which is about personnel more than anything, but – that whole thing was Tepper trying to – there's a really good story by Joe Person in The Athletic who wrote about this, trying to basically, like, let's get this guy from this guy –
the all-star
smash
staff.
Them together, and then they all were –
too many voices.
They were – yeah, and they were all, you know, stabbing each other in the back with meat, all this stuff.
It's a disaster.
So that's why hiring your buddies – just hire people you think are good and hire people you trust. There is something to that. Now, hoteling, we need to figure this out.
Pretty sure it's hoteling.
Yeah, I know Vrabel said he had a great interview. I mean, maybe that is a mistake hire. Maybe, I mean, if you think you can do a lot better, then sure, think about it. But I don't care who you bring in here. Bring in Jeff Stoutland with this group. It's not going to be good.
Yeah, personnel first. I think Nashville needs to consider with all of this, personnel first, right? If Rob Moore, again. Good with A.J. Brown, not so good without A.J. Brown. Good with DeAndre Hopkins, right? The receivers have gone as the talent has gone. It's about personnel talent first and foremost. I wrote a tweet the other day, and I said, all of this, the core of all of this is offensive line, where they started making personnel mistakes in 2020 and haven't dug out of it. It started with the Isaiah Wilson pick. And it's gone south since then. One more Stillman point, and you did touch on this. Skaronski's had three bad games, a particularly bad game this week. Doesn't make him a bad player. Doesn't write his story. Like, why can't you have faith in Peter Skaronski being a bad player who's having a bad stretch?
A good player?
Yeah, being a good player, sorry. I think Peter Skaronski will be fine. I think he's having a bad stretch. These things are possible. If you judge everybody on what they've done right now, you know, you're going to get some people who are good right now who aren't that good, and you're going to have some people who are bad right now who turn out to be good. You have to have some ability to have vision beyond right now.
We'll have more with Paul Kuharsky from PaulKuharsky.com coming up next, talking all things Tennessee Titans. You're listening to Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Paul Kuharsky from PaulKuharsky.com with us for the next 45 minutes, talking all things Tennessee Titans, 615-737-1025, our phone number. So I'm with you on the personnel front. It's a personnel problem for sure with the Titans offensive line. Now, having said that, you fired Keith Carter last year, and you hired a guy that was his assistant. And the reason being, Vrabel talked about, was he gave one of the best interviews that he's ever seen. And you've got an offensive line that has struggled mightily for 2 years in a row. Again, I'm with you. It's personnel related. However, I don't blame a Titans fan that says, was that really the best hire you could have made when you fired Keith Carter, you hired his assistant, and now the offensive line is still terrible? Like, maybe a change in philosophy, bringing in somebody else
would have been the better route to go, and that's the route the Titans should go this offseason, even though it's only been 1 year with Haas at that point. What do you make of that decision? I know hindsight being 2020 of Rabel going the route that he did at offensive line coach last year.
I agree with that. I mean, I want more outside fresh blood. And to Joe's point about, and I talked about this
in
my broadcast after the game. Like, you can't assemble an all-star, if you got the best position coach at every position, that doesn't necessarily make you the best staff. You've got to, have cohesion and get along and follow the overall plan and all of that, and that's very important. But that doesn't mean you can't go outside more than he's gone outside. And he likes to develop from within, and there have been some success stories there. But look, Tony Dews is perceived as a good coach, but he had Derrick Henry, and now he's with the tight ends, and the tight ends aren't doing anything. Chig hasn't developed in his second year, anything like we expected, but he's become a blocker more than a receiver. So his overall theme of wanting to develop guys from within and give them opportunities and all of that, I don't have a problem with that. I think he's overused it to a degree. And this would be the biggest example. And I would like to see him consider doing something different there with the second overhaul of the offensive line in 2 years. It would seem to make sense to me.
So, I think that's fair to consider that. I don't know, man. I'm trying to think of like great coaches, great coaching tenures. And how often did Bill Belichick, and I know right now he's about to be out of there and it's gone downhill, but how often did he just go out and poach someone who was, and I could be misremembering, but it seems like for the most part it was his guys and they, right, grew into, right. I mean, I hear in there you have like a Dan Quinn hire, which I you could make the case, like Jim Schwartz. Jim Schwartz wanted to be a DC, so he got himself to where he wanted to get back into the game full time. Should you have? I mean, it's way overblown, Jim, what he did when he was here. But I do think that it's fair to say there was a chance maybe to get a big-time proven coordinator. I think coordinator level is a little different than assistant coach level too, right?
Yeah, Schwartz was here, he didn't even give him the headset for the preseason game where he needed a head coach.
Right. My understanding of Jim Schwartz's first year in particular is like they let him hang around a little bit.
Yeah, it was very much in the background. His health issue, he wasn't in good health. May have still.
And people
been
are like, "Oh, Jim Schwartz is here. Look at what they did." Yeah, well, they added pass rush, and Landry became good, and Simmons was dominant, and Dupree actually played some, and Autry was awesome. It's not Shane Bowen didn't do that either,
right? I mean, but those players. Guys, I mean, it is fair to say that front four is largely intact this year. I agree with you. And I have the same evaluation of Schwartz.
Well, players get older and players get hurt.
Schwartz didn't do a great deal. But for the 2 years he was here, the defense was good. And the year before he was here, the defense stunk. And the year after he's gone, the defense stinks.
So you think there's correlation?
You have to put it in the basket.
It's fine to mention it, but like there are people who seriously think he was the key to everything. Like the Wizard of Oz, it's just not true.
It's not true, but it's in the basket.
It's interesting, like, and on the offensive line front too. Again, like, it's if you draft a left tackle or if you make a better decision, there's about three or four decisions that you should have made better on the offensive line since 2020, as you've laid out. Then it's a different conversation that we're having here. I do think though, I look at Nicholas Petit-Frere, who to me looked the exact same or maybe even worse this year, from last year. Dylan Radins, like, has he really developed in anything? Like, he may just not have it.
But I think he's actually better, but it was terrible. You're coming from a bad place.
But you're not developing anybody. Like, nobody's getting better. And that is also the part about the offensive line that bothers me.
Ceiling's there are limited. Radins is just a bad pick. He's a bust as a second rounder. He's more like a sixth rounder who turns into a backup guard. That's just a terrible pick. Nicholas Petitfrere killed himself with the gambling suspension, which is completely out of their control. They did all the gambling education stuff, and this guy effed it up and set himself back, and the whole thing was a mess from the start. That's not them. That's him.
I would say, I mean, one guy who I know, and I'm not opposed to the idea that they have to upgrade, but I think, like, Aaron Brewer's gotten better in his time here. He was a dude who was, like, you know, okay, barely making the roster to starting center. Again, not a great starting center, but, like, that's a guy who's gotten better,
he's a
right?
middle-of-the-pack starting center. They've made him better, but they need to be better at the position
right.
going forward.
You need better players. Again, I get back to...
Yeah, I don't disagree that they haven't developed those guys. But my thing is, again, you know, does Philly develop those guys? They didn't develop Dillard. You know, so I just
drafted
don't know
him and
who,
then they're like, oh, this guy's better.
Exactly.
I just don't know who develops these guys that much. I don't think they're good guys. I don't think the personnel is that good. I think Chris Harris is a good coach who came from the outside. And what's he done for Trey Avery? Nothing, yeah. Because Trey Avery's not good.
Well, now, and to your point about Carthon and Vrabel, you know, I said this the other day. You know, if they don't fix this offseason, it's going to get them fired. Like, yeah. It's about the offensive line this offseason to protect your quarterback. You've gotten Tannehill hurt this year, and now you've gotten Levis hurt. And if you go through another offseason and it looks like what it does this year and your offensive line is total crap, that's going to be what gets Vrabel and Carthon fired.
And no bargain basement. Bargain basement's fine for depth and whatever. You know, if you're changing, say, three or four positions here, two or three of them, you know, one of them's got to be probably the first rounder, definitely the second rounder, one of your top two picks. You know, there's not a premier left tackle out there, but there are premier players out there. Hunt, I'm about to post Mike Herndon on this super thorough look at the options out there. And there are some quality offensive linemen out there. They aren't necessarily left tackles. But he also points out, you know.
But Alt is.
Yeah, no. But free agent.
You're saying
free agent
oh, I'm sorry.
Free agent wise. There are guys. And he points out that there are a good number of pass rushers now who line up against the right tackle. You know, and John Robinson believed in this because he spent a huge ton of resources on right tackle. He just missed. And one thing that keeps coming up, like that the start of the problem was letting Jack Conklin go. The start of the problem wasn't letting Jack Conklin go. Start of the problem was the failure to replace Jack Conklin.
Yep.
You can let people leave. You just have to replace them. The Titans' failure to replace people was the problem.
Well, they did. I mean, they invested in replacing. They just made it yeah. You know, worked
you
out.
Can't pick Isaiah Wills?
615-737-1025, our phone number. More coming up with Paul Kuharsky from paulkuharsky.com. Next, you're listening to Robbie and Rex Road, 1025-1063, The Game. Make your silly underdog picks today for your chance to win weekly prizes. You can play at thegamenashville.com or the 1025 The Game app. Silly underdog picks presented by Volunteer Hose and Gasket. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road, live from our 1025 The Game studio. Brought to you by Hiller Plumbing, Heating, Cooling, and Electrical. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Nick Keiser, Paul Kuharsky from paulkuharsky.com. Talking all things Tennessee Titans. So, obviously, PK, offensive line was atrocious on Sunday. We've discussed that. What do you make of the conversation around Tim Kelly right now, particularly, you know, running the ball as often as he did on first and 10 on Sunday against Houston? Derrick Henry was averaging 0.6 yards per carry. Kind of felt like they were slamming their head against the wall at times in that game. What did you make of Tim Kelly, the game that he called, and the discussion around Kelly at this point of the job that he's done to this point in the season?
Well, they absolutely were slamming their heads against the wall. And maybe, look, maybe it's a concession like this is all we can do. And this is the way that we're going to protect Will Levis, even though it didn't ultimately work. But you can't keep doing something that's got no chance of working. And I understand they're saying, oh, it's so often we've gone fruitless with Derek and then something's popped later. There was nothing that they could look at. There's nothing that they could look at in that and say, oh, one's coming. Look at what's happening here. That's going to turn into something or whatever. I mean, on six of those carries, he ran straight into somebody. Like his rushing yards over, quote-unquote, expected were negative 22 3. He got 23 yards less than were available to him. So according to Next Gen Stats. So it's not just the offensive line. It was him. It was an unbelievably terrible game by him. And I don't understand why at some point when the 2 weeks previous against Miami, particularly late, and against Indianapolis when he was out because he was being checked for a concussion, and Spears was doing well, and Spears was better in this game, 3 yards a carry, which ain't great, but it's a hell of a lot better than 0.6. You don't go to Spears, and you don't run more often wide instead of trying to run up the middle against a very good run defense. I thought it was malpractice what they did with Derrick Henry in this game. And I thought, you know, they helped him look terrible by continuing to give him the ball. It was a disservice to him. I think Tim Kelly's been up and down. I mean, they have a bag of trick plays that have worked. I don't know why they didn't pull something out against the Texans.
Again, Wildcat.
Yeah, one snap of Wildcat, which also produced, what, 0 yards? Or was it -3? Or was it -7? Or pick a negative number. Overall, look, I know people are incredibly dissatisfied. I think he's shown some good signs. I'd like to see him call plays for a line that can protect and for a team that has more weapons than DeAndre Hopkins and Spears occasionally.
You know, the whole Henry thing, Next Gen Stats, I like all those underlying numbers. I appreciate all those things. I would also – I'd like to take part in the evaluation of that. Because I there were like a couple carries in that game where I'm like, yeah, break that tackle. You get 10, 12 yards at least, right? And he didn't. Couple.
Yeah.
I mean, 12 carries. I don't care if it's Jim Brown, Barry Sanders, whoever you want, at the absolute peak of their powers. You're tackled by two guys before you have a chance to make a move. So that 23, that stat is interesting to me, you know, and how – I mean, I understand. Look, we use these stats. They do help tell the story. They also aren't gospel.
Yeah,
just like traditional stats aren't gospel. You can pick those apart too.
12 carries on first down for 0 yards.
Yeah.
You got to do something else. Do something else.
No, I agree.
And where is the short passing game? Why is there no short passing game for this
team? You
know,
Vrabel talked about that after the game, and he wasn't asked about it, but he brought it up, which I thought was interesting, and it makes sense
what
because
did you say, remind me?
Well, basically, he's like, guys have got to get open quickly. I mean, so, because that's the thing. There were a lot of plays where Levis is actually, he didn't get protected well, but he did have time in some of these plays where, like, I think he wanted to get rid of the ball quicker. The first read's taken away, that happens. I agree with you. The short passing should be there. How much of it is their inability to make that work?
Well, that's fine. But Kyle Phillips was out this game with a hamstring. But the two games prior, one of them they chose to sit him.
Yeah.
And the other one they threw him one pass. And he's the guy who can get open quickly. And they even when he had those couple 60-yard games, they weren't using him
much
on short stuff.
Yeah.
So I don't understand
the 20
use
yards
of,
down the field. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't understand the use of Kyle Phillips, who's the one guy who absolutely can get open quickly.
Well, and then there's the
and so can Spears.
Yeah, and then there's, you know, the Burks front. We talked about this earlier. It was good to see 3 catches, 62 yards. If Levis sees him on the one play, he's probably got a touchdown there. So there were signs of life from him. But, you know, Hopkins, 2 catches on 9 targets. Like, it's clear that he was trying to go to Hopkins, and that connection just seemed off.
Well, they get the two big plays to Burks in the first half, and they're like, okay.
We'll see you later.
Plays to Burks. Check that off. We'll get him 1 5-yard play in the second half. That's good. Like every other team in the league, I feel like most other teams in the league would be like, hey, we got 2 plays to Burks going. Let's build on it. Let's find something else for him. They're like, okay, done. 3 this week, maybe 4 next week.
Yeah. You say that, but also when you are as inept as they are at sustaining drives, you know, that's the thing. How many plays
drives is a 37-yard pass to Burks?
Well,
try
agree.
Something again.
But how many plays were there to be made downfield to somebody except that Will Levis has his leg pinned underneath him?
Well, I don't know. Try it on first down instead of handing it to Henry.
Yeah.
Which is getting you negative yards.
I don't disagree.
So are you, you know, we'll see how his injury progresses here.
Rex Road, I believe, is of the mindset, tell me if I'm wrong, of just shutting him down the rest of the year, talking about Levis. Do you buy into that?
I mean, I wouldn't officially say that, and maybe at the end he could play that game, but I don't think they need to see anything else.
No, but if he can play, he should play. I don't think he's going to play this week, but if rehab goes well and he's got a chance to play in Houston or against Jacksonville, he should play. I'm not of the opinion like, oh, we've seen enough, and he doesn't need to play anymore. I mean, if he can play without doing any damage to it or whatever, play him. The more experience he can get, the better.
What do you think the future holds for Tannehill? I would assume if Levis can't go, we're going to see him this week. It's three games at the end of the season with a team that's eliminated. So it's not like, you know, teams around the league are going to find out anything new about Ryan Tannehill. Do you think he's a starter next year? Do you think he's a bridge guy? Do you think he's a backup? How do you view Tannehill right now?
I think if Arthur Smith is in Atlanta, I think he's probably a starting quarterback in Atlanta next year. Atlanta needs a veteran starter next year. I don't know what they come up with that's better than him.
Justin Fields.
Maybe Justin Fields. But Justin Fields is going to cost you in a way that Ryan Tannehill's not. And I think, you know, running a very safe offense with Ryan Tannehill, Atlanta could be, you know, substantially two wins better than it's going to be anyway, which in that division, you know, could win the division or could certainly get you a wild card if you could keep them healthy. And they have a pretty good offensive line, though we didn't see the good version of their offensive line when they were here, because I think the Titans had six sacks in that game. But it makes sense. Good protection, Ryan Tannehill and that array of weapons, plus Robinson in the backfield. You could try an older version of the best version of the Titans offense that Arthur Smith had here.
Got a couple from the text line real quick, driven by WilsonCountyHoney.com, I want to throw at you. One is, Kevin says, Schwartz didn't do anything, so what difference would a new O-line coach make? Y'all talk out of both sides of your mouth. Like, Schwartz was an assistant coach, people. He did not coach players. He did not have a headset. He was here in the building. I think he helped Shane Bowen. I mean, why is this hard? This one's not that hard. Coy and Clarksville, this one's for you, Paul. How is Stillman dangerous? Because he doesn't accept mediocrity like the rest of Titans media? I put it to you, Paul.
Yeah, I told you how he's dangerous. He's giving out misinformation where he's suggesting that this offensive line coach has the same degree of input into player selection as a Hall of Fame player who coached the offensive line for, I don't know, 13 years. And then if fans believe that, they go, well, Vrabel and Carthon are idiots that they would give this guy the same degree of input. And he leaves no room there for nuance where this guy, they might say, do you like him? And he might say, yeah. And then it might have absolutely no influence on it, where Mike Munchak might have said, yeah, give me Eugene Amano. I can make something of that guy. And they'll draft Eugene Amano. What's this guy's name? Clark?
Coy.
Coy in Clarksville.
You see how there's a huge difference there? And it might mislead
Coy,
listeners?
You see that, Coy?
So him not accepting mediocrity is fine. I don't accept mediocrity either. And by the way, mediocrity is a huge overstatement for what this team is, Coy. So you should pick your words more carefully because they're important, as Jared should as well. He's got all this time to talk because he's talking by himself. So he should allow for nuance. He could do a whole segment on that, how Haas and Munch surely can't have the same input. Because one is one of the greatest offensive linemen of all time, and the other is in his very first year coaching.
So is it basically for some people that unless you want them both fired, now Jared's the only person I think who does, like in terms of media.
He was
like
fired, Vrabel and Carthon?
Absolutely. Yeah. They must be fired. Unless that's what you think, then you're accepting mediocrity. That's the thing. It's either people must be fired.
See, this is exactly why he's dangerous, because this guy thinks that. Thinks that you're accepting mediocrity unless you want everyone fired.
I told
him. And there's no nuance there whatsoever. That's why he's dangerous.
I told him yesterday, I'm like, I so badly want you to like fall into billions and own a sports team. And he's like, you know, it'd probably be a lot like the Baltimore Ravens franchise.
No.
Sure. It'd be a lot a model of professional sports consistency.
Yeah. No, it'd be a lot like the Browns.
That would it would probably be more like that.
615-737-1025, our phone number. More with Paul Kaharski coming up next. This is Robbie and Rex Road, 1025-1063, the game. Welcome back in. Final segment of the day. Robbie and Rex Road, 1025-1063, the game. Paul Kaharski from PaulKaharski.com with us here on the program. Joe Rex Road, people have set you off on the text line.
Well, I'll real quick address. I'm going back and forth with Kevin, who's like, Mr. Know-It-All, you guys think you're so smart and you don't realize how stupid you sound. So basically, he's convinced that, like, Schwartz coming in here was like Vrabel's master plan to fix the defense. It was a favor to Schwartz. Schwartz was in bad health. Schwartz has talked about it. I've talked to people who were there who said Schwartz did almost nothing his first year here. You can believe it or not. You can think it sounds stupid. You don't know what you're talking about. He did more his second year. I think that there was some value in his consulting to Shane Bowen. He did no coaching of players. He was not a coach. He was not a position coach. There are limitations to what you can do. He had no headset. The idea that he was the actual mastermind because their defense was better those years is stupid. I understand the circumstantial evidence of Schwartz is here, the defense is better. Schwartz leaves, the defense stinks. Look at the personnel. Look at how the personnel changed from 20 to 21 and then from 22 to 23. Okay? I'm not saying there's no factor for Jim Schwartz, but this idea that he was actually the answer is stupid. And I just, especially like, again, year one, Jim Schwartz has talked about where he was. He was trying to just kind of hang around the building. It was, help me out, Paul.
I don't understand.
Unmute yourself, Paul.
I don't understand the guy's, what the guy's saying. He's saying that.
Basically, it was Vrabel who went out and got him, and why the hell was he here? And like, no.
Well,
I'm
Vrabel
sorry.
Went out and got him, then Vrabel would have tried to have kept him. Like, if Vrabel was so in love
and
with
again,
him.
And again, I said it before. Like, I don't hate the idea of, hey, Jim, you getting back into this? Because, you know.
I mean, he's obviously a good defensive coordinator.
Yeah. There's no doubt he's a great defensive coordinator. I mean, I think he was a decent head coach for the terrible Lions. I'm just saying his role here dictated, and his personal situation his first year here all dictated that the impact was minimal. And you just –
I don't know how many times we got to say it. We're making a show decree. We're not bringing up the Jim Schwartz stuff anymore. If you want to bring up Jim Schwartz stuff, take it somewhere else, because quite frankly, I'm tired of talking about it. Let's go to our 1025 phone
named.
Line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, and welcome in Jared. Jared, good morning. Thanks for calling in.
Morning, guys. How's it going?
Good.
Hey, so season ticket holder, I go to all the games, and I'm about 8 rows back behind the Titans sideline. And I just kind of had to go along with what Paul said. For really the first time, I guess this season, I started to get frustrated with play calling and just watching Tim Kelly walk, pace up and down the sidelines, and just the stubbornness of continuing to go with Henry. And I get the, hey, we eventually are going to have something break here because we've always had that. But you could just tell it was not the case in this game. And when I did an end like a solo bet of Tajay Spears passing yards, over of 11.5 yards, and they dumped it off to him for about a gain of 7 on a long third down in the first half. And I thought, man, I'm just going to go ahead and pay the grocery bill next week and take this, especially with what we did last week. And they literally did not throw it again the whole rest of the game, just a dump off or anything to Spears. And I don't understand, how do you go from what he did in torching Miami, and I know it was late in the game and they were playing back and everything, but to not even try anything different is what really frustrated me, because they should have won that game. It was just an awful game to lose to Houston. But I just thought I'd get your thoughts on why they didn't go to Spears and try that more.
Thanks for the call, Jared.
I don't know. I maybe part of it is that Henry's had such success against Houston in the past, and they said, you know, he said, after Vrabel said, there've been plenty of times where it's been a slog and ultimately he's popped one. There was no evidence that he was going to pop one here. And I think that's just, I wrote, I think they threw up their hands like, we've got no answers. And then they threw their hands together in prayer, like, please let us pop one. And if that's the best you've got, That's pretty sad.
Yeah, Shakespeare. Yeah, Bill Shakespeare over here. Huh? Who we got over here?
You didn't read that one, did you, Chief? Huh?
Someone wanted us to ask you about Tyr Tart, the saga of Tyr Tart. What's it all mean?
Well, I think with Monty Rice gone and Tyr Tart gone in short order, that they're showing that you know, no matter how things are going, you're going to behave and give a certain standard, meet a certain standard of effort and attitude, or you're not going to be here. And I presume that that's a healthy thing overall, a healthy message to send, even as you near the end. And Tart's a sad story. I mean, he was a very good player. And this year he just got caught up in things that didn't involve playing well. And playing well answers a lot of things.
He still
winning
played well
answers
at times,
a
but
lot
he wasn't
of
in
things.
Good shape.
Yeah. And the last 3 weeks he didn't play well. And there was a moment, I think Terry McCormick was reminding us, somebody went and recovered a fumble on the sideline early in the season. And in his show he said, and here's, you know, an example of what happens if you give great effort. And Tart was standing over on the side just kind of watching it, and he pointed to him and he goes, and here's an example of not giving great effort.
Let's quickly go back to our 102.5 The Game phone line. Welcome in, Kyle. Kyle, got about 30 seconds. Thanks for calling in.
Yeah, man. Thanks for the show, guys. I really appreciate it. I just wanted to say thank you to Positive PK for showing logic to that show in the afternoon that I cannot stand listening to. So Merry Christmas, guys, and I appreciate it.
Thanks for the call, Kyle.
Congratulations on your good taste.
But like Paul, it sounds like you do listen to it. Dangerous.
And PK broke down the percentage a couple weeks ago.
A lot of broken radius.
Right. That's right.
A lot of broken radius. Mine wasn't broken. I was curious, and I'm no longer
your
curious.
Victrola?
No, I've been in the car at that time more lately because my kid's out of school.
Yeah. No, yeah. No, that sounds a likely story. Yeah. Just happened to be, oh, what's this on? Oh, I guess I'll listen to this guy for a minute. Okay. Must be like that.
Trying
like
for
that.
Redemption of the accent as we close things out here after it went significantly downhill.
I mean, I've been in here all season every week. You've brought him up every show. I brought him up one show. Your batting average is way higher than mine, Chief.
But I, you know, I'm contractually obligated to argue with him every week. Like today, check out Jared versus Joe, 5 o'clock on Stillman & Company.
PK, Merry Christmas. Great to have you in every week,
Merry
as always.
Merry Christmas to you guys. And my Christmas wish for everyone is that they don't block the box and that they lock their locks.
Absolutely. That's going to do it for us today on Robbie and Rexro. We will be back 6 a.m. tomorrow. Chase and Big Joe is coming up next. You're listening to 102.5, 106.3, The Game.
What's up, everybody? It's Bretzky, and America is turning 250. And I can't think of a better way to celebrate that than playing on an American-owned social casino, SpinQuest.com. With all of your favorite games, live craps, bubble craps, live blackjack, there's no better place to play for free and win real cash prizes. SpinQuest.com.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
Stop the podcast.
Stop the podcast.
Hi, everybody. Just to let you know, this episode of Fish is sponsored by TV licensing.
Yes, TV licensing. What are you watching on TV, Andy?
I have been watching a show that's called 2 Weeks in August.
Okay.
Despite it being July at the time of recording.
Oh, you don't have to watch TV shows in the time that their name references.
No, absolutely. I watched The Darling Buds of May in winter. Anyway, 2 Weeks in August. It's a really good series. It's set on a lovely Mediterranean holiday.
Ooh.
And it's a group of old mates from uni who've gathered together. Some of them have got kids. Some of them haven't. Some of them have been going through big life events. And it's one of those amazing pressure cooker series where things just get more and more and more tense.
Oh, those stressful ones.
I love it. I love it.
I love my comedy, I gotta say. So I've been watching Android, which is Diane Morgan's new thing, and I absolutely love it. But I always on television watch everything with someone from Bolton in it. That's basically all I watch.
And she's from Bolton.
She's from Bolton.
But in this show, I believe she's a robot.
She's a robot, and it is not certain where in the country she's from.
It depends where the facility is that makes her, I suppose.
I guess so. But what are we actually here to say?
Oh, we're here to say that if you want to watch any of these shows, your TV license covers you to watch over 400 TV channels and everything on BBC iPlayer.
That is incredible.
So 2 Weeks in August has finished going out now, but you can get hold of it on the iPlayer.
If you want to find out more about this, then go to tvl.co.uk/pod.
Now back to the tension and the stress and the misery of this episode of Fish.
Oh, I thought you were referencing Bolton. On with the podcast.